We are proud to partner with MyFlex Learning. MyFlex Learning is a scheduling platform that helps middle and high schools meet the individual needs of all students. Students can easily create and manage time for flex blocks, wind time, activity periods, RTI, counselor and teacher appointments, and so much more. Even my favorite, synergy time. And with its built-in accountability tool and reporting features, MyFlex Learning solves your challenges around getting kids where they need to be and understanding how flex time is spent. Make flex time work for you. Visit myflexlearning.com/BE to learn more and receive $500 off your first year. That's myflexlearning.com/BE. This B Podcast Network show is presented by IXL. IXL's all-inclusive online teaching and learning platform simplifies edtech needs and accelerates achievement in 95 of the top 100 U.S. school districts. IXL delivers personalized learning across a comprehensive pre-K-12 curriculum, including math, language arts, science, and social studies, and helps you assess student performance through actionable, real-time insights at every level of your school or district. This one solution performs work that typically requires dozens of tools. Want to find out why so many leading districts trust IXL? Visit IXL.com/BE. That's IXL.com/BE. If you've been listening to Transformative Principle for any amount of time, you know that I have a love-hate relationship with EdTech. We have the ability to personalize learning for every single one of our students, and yet so many of our EdTech tools fall short. We need our technology to do more for us. That's why it's so important for me to know that IXL provides true personalized learning across the entire pre-K-12 curriculum, and that it's proven to benefit all student populations, including English language learners and students in special ed programs. As a principal, I've used this in my school. As a parent, I've had my children use it as well. And let me tell you, this is a tool that definitely helps students learn and practice better. IXL is research proven to accelerate achievement. Studies across 45 states show that IXL schools outperform non-IXL schools on state assessments, and independent research from Johns Hopkins University verifies that IXL meets ESSA Tier 1 standards. With those results combined with IXL's teacher-friendly reputation, what more could you ask for? Now, you also know that I don't care so much about test scores, but I know that they are legislatively convenient and something that we have to deal with and manage on a day-to-day basis. If you can implement something that is easy and effective, why wouldn't you do it? If you have a goal to increase achievement for all students, make sure to find out what IXL can do for you. Visit IXL.com/B for a demo. That's IXL.com/BE. Welcome to Transformative Principle, where I help you stop putting out fires and start leading. I'm your host, Jethro Jones. You can follow me on Twitter at Jethro Jones. Let's talk about flex time in schools. If you've been listening for a long time, you know how important I think this is. It gives us more time for personalized learning, increasing choice and agency for students, and the increased enrollment that comes with it, dedicated time for intervention and enrichment. And overall, as school leaders, it gives us and our faculty more tools to increase academic achievement. But the implementation and management of flex time can be so tough. Tricky logistics and a lack of clear accountability systems can prevent teachers from buying in and can hold us back from ensuring students make good use of their time. I'm pleased to share that MyFlex Learning provides a solution to these challenges and more. MyFlex Learning helps you create and manage flexible time for any purpose, and with seamless SIS integration, a student locator, flexible daily rostering, and an intuitive mobile app, it eliminates the common challenges of implementation and management. Want to see for yourself? Visit myflexlearning.com/B to learn more about it and receive $500 off the first year of use. That's myflexlearning.com/BE. Welcome to Transformative Principle. Today, I'm honored to have on the program Topaz Adizes. He's an Emmy Award-winning writer, director, and experienced design architect. He's an Edmund Hillary Fellow and Sundance School Stories of Change Fellow. His works have been selected to Cannes, Sundance, IDFA, and South by Southwest, and featured in New Yorker Magazine, Vanity Fair, and New York Times. And he has garnered an Emmy for New Approaches to Documentary and two World Press Photo Awards for Immersive Storytelling and Interactive Documentary. He's the founder and executive director of the experience design studio, The Skin Deep. And Topaz, welcome to Transformative Principle. Grateful to have you here.
Thanks, Jethro. Good to be here.
So from our conversation today, what stands out to you as the most valuable thing that we talked about?
How to have connective conversations and the value of them. How to have them, why to have them, and what's the payoff?
I think for me, connected to that is the power of listening, and that we need to place even more emphasis on listening to the conversations that we have rather than just asking questions or responding, but really take time to listen. So this is a great interview. Mm-hmm. We talk about a lot of stuff. I hope you enjoy it. We'll get to my interview with Topaz here in just a moment. So Topaz, why don't you start out and explain what the AND is and the 12 questions for love and how those two things relate?
Sure. So, well, the AND speaks about the space between, because a relationship is not you or I, us or them. It's you and I, us and them. So it's the AND that connects us. So basically 10 years ago, I wanted to explore with this format where I had basically a bi-panel or a triptych where I had two cameras. I would put two people in a room with a small coffee table between them, and then I'd give them questions to ask each other. And I would film this with a one camera on a wide shot and then two over the shoulders where they're close up. So at minimal, you're always watching two people's faces as they asked each other questions. And the idea was that this would illuminate the space between. When someone says, "What's the last time I disappointed you and how do you feel about it now?" Before they even begin to speak, because you as an audience member are witnessing two people's faces reacting to that question, you're starting to get a sense of the connection between them. And that's what the AND speaks to. It's about the space between. It's about that invisible thread of connection that exists in all our relationships between you and your wife, you and your best friend, you and your children. And the AND is illuminating a little bit of dust so that it reveals that thread of connection so that you could see it and the audience could see it. And we've been doing that for 10 years. We've had over 1,200 participants, pairs on. And at this point, we have a library of conversations of all kinds of relationships filmed in 9 countries over the last 10 years. And then the book, you asked about the book, but 12 questions, you know, an editor came out and said, "Topaz, can you distill down what you've learned from holding the space for all these 1,200 conversations from the last 10 years? And just very prescriptively, what are the 12 questions? If you're going to sit down and have a conversation, what would be the 12 questions that you know are the meat and potatoes are going to create a cathartic conversation, a deep exploratory conversation? What are those?" And that's basically what's in the book, is the tools of how to do it, how to hold the space, how to construct good questions, and, you know, a guide to, here, ask these 12 questions, have an incredible conversation, and why it works.
Yeah, and so we're not going to spend the time on this show going through each of those 12 questions, though I think there's value in that, but we are going to hit on a few of the different ones. And I think that the important thing to first start out is to ask about these 12 questions. Did you know the 12 questions beforehand, or did they reveal themselves through the process? And, you know, after doing so many of these pairs and for so long, how did the questions evolve, and or did they at all?
Yeah, no, great question. It's trial and error, testing, trying it out, seeing what worked, and also seeing what questions worked in what sequence. In essence, when I started, I'm not a therapist. My mom's a therapist. I'm not. I'm a filmmaker by trade, by practice. And when I was exploring with this project, the AND, which I was really wanted to explore human connection, human intimacy. And I realized it was working. My team and I were like, wow, this is working. Why are they having these conversations? And why are these questions working? Why are those questions not working? What if we put this question that worked really interestingly next to this one? Or what if that one, what if we tweak this question this way? And it was really exploratory. And, you know, after 10 years, 12, I mean, doing it so much and having understanding, it was trial and error, right? Just learning what works across a whole variety of socioeconomic backgrounds and cultures and ethnicities, with primarily in the U.S., gives us a sense of these questions could really work across mm-hmm. the board. But it was trial and error.
So talk to me a little bit about that, because you, if you haven't seen the videos, there's links to them in the show notes, and you should definitely go watch a few of them, because there's like a moment in the videos that I've watched where the connection happens. And like, you're a filmmaker, so your job is to create and find those moments and get that story out and get that connection that people have with each other out. But what we don't see is how long it took to get there. You know, you may have filmed for an hour and only used 3 or 4 minutes, maybe even a minute of a particular video and a particular thing that you're producing. So talk a little bit more about that process of going through and asking those questions and making it so that people could be real and authentic in those situations where it would either A, be easy to act, or B, be easy to fake it and pretend like there's something there when there's not. Or C, to be like this robot that's uncomfortable all the time and doesn't do well when the camera goes on. How did you work through that process?
Well, I mean, what's amazing about this format that we have, and I call the AND a format, you know, two people facing each other with a coffee table between them with three cameras, and we don't say action. You know, we have a certain way that we hold a space for people, and the questions are created when they step into a production. They're created from a questionnaire. My team or the director or myself read the questionnaire, and we custom make the questions and put them in a certain order. And what's beautiful about this experience is that there are as many stories of relationships as there are grains of sand on the beach. And if you create the right space and you have well-constructed questions, you'll have an incredible conversation, an exploratory one, and one that's new, that's different, that's unlike that you've had before, that's not repeating the same pattern or script that you've had in previous conversations. And so now sometimes I have a director who says, oh, Topaz, they're not having this moment of connection that you're alluding to, or they're not, you know, and my response is, that's because you have a certain idea of what it should be, and you have to let that go, because it is what is. And what we like to say at the Skin Deep, because the Skin Deep is the experience design studio that has created the AND that we're talking about now, but also a number of other things, other experiences, is that we're really good at letting humans be humans. And I think the listener out now, but what, how does this pertain to me? Is like, if you want to have a real conversation with your partner and you come to them with an agenda, or your question, it has an agenda behind it, then that doesn't create the space for them to step into it, to step forward. We allow humans to be humans in the space that we create, and whether they have this moment of connection or not, I'm not sure what you define as a moment of connection, but for me, the format itself, the fact that we're elevating the listener on the same level as the speaker, what I mean by that is that you see both their face at the same time. If you think of most of the content you watch, films, TV, even social media, what you see is the person talking. You never see at the same time the person listening. And so what we're subconsciously suggesting, or the media suggests, is because of that, is the speaker is who's important. And when we show you the listener at the same time, at the same, you know, they own half the screen as much as the speaker, we're saying the listening is just as important as the speaker. And through that, you get a sense of the connection and the space between, whatever that connection is, right? Even if someone says, you know, one of the rules is you don't have to answer any question you don't want, but you do have to ask it. So someone asks it, they look at each other and say, oh, let's talk about that at home. Let's talk about it later. You know, and obviously not in front of cameras. Great. But because you see both faces, you sense the unsaid. You sense just the connection of, this is uncomfortable, let's not talk about it here. And that gives you a sense of their relationship. It gives you a sense of their dynamic, of the that pair's dynamic.
Yeah, that's very fascinating.
So I'm not sure if I answered your question, but the thing is, we don't have an agenda. People come in, it's an opportunity to have a conversation, to explore. They take it where they want. So in the experience, you know, in giving permission to the participants to have that, and then also to each other to share that, creates a new space for them to be in. Because we don't get that experience in everyday life.
Yeah, it's true. We don't. And a lot of times, especially because, you know, my audience is educators and this is the space where we're at, we also don't have time for a lot of these conversations to happen because we're doing the work of educating kids. And so we don't have an opportunity to really ask these deeper questions. But that's something that I feel so strongly about, especially as it comes to principals doing observations on teachers and helping them grow and develop, that we need to ask these deeper questions because the deeper questions are really the things that matter, and the other stuff that we often think matters really doesn't matter. What's your perspective on that?
Well, what comes up for me from what you said, and I'm not sure I'm not going to answer the question yet, but what comes up for me is you talked about time. And it seems like time and the depth of questions, you need more time for it. And I'm not sure that's true because not necessarily. If you have limited, it's you're walking down the hall, you see the kid, most of you are going to say, how are you doing? You know, or how was your game? Or how did you do on the test? Those three questions might be similar pattern questions that you ask many students and they're used to. And then we fall into some kind of societal programming response. How are you doing today? Great. How was the test? Good. Did you win? How was the game? We won. Done. How about, what surprised you most today? What did you try and what did you fail at today? You know, what do you think is the hardest thing for me right now? I mean, now that's a little more, that's definitely going to stop whoever you're walking by in their tracks and they take a moment to think, okay, wait, I can't just give the generic answer that I get to just move on. And I guess what comes up for me is there's two things for a cathartic space to explore and have is one, you need a space. And what that means is intention. And the second thing is you need well-constructed questions. And well-constructed questions can help support and create a space themselves. We have these card games, right? And the card games, they're a game, but the game gives you permission to be in that space. Meaning if your wife came to you tonight, Jethro, and was like, Jethro, why do you love me? Out of the blue, you're not wondering why you love her. You're wondering why she asked me this because there's the space that's been created. But if you're playing a game and she asks you that question because she pulled out the card, oh, wait, you're not wondering why she asked you. You know why she asked you. You're playing a game. That space has been created. And now, because you're playing a game, that question has been answered. You can actually let her know and she can actually receive. So those are the two pieces. And I'm not sure they're so always allocated to time. Obviously, if you want to go deep and dive and you create the space, it's helpful. But with principals and many of the people listening that have limited time because they have so many plates, maybe it's just good asking different kinds of questions because that also brings pause and a different, it's like connecting two different thoughts in a different way. And that creates new opportunities that they may not have seen otherwise.
Yeah, I think that's really powerful, Topaz. And I appreciate you bringing that up. So this idea of intention and well-constructed questions, I'm reminded of a story where I had a boss who said, we really need to be focused on student achievement. And like, that is the be all and end all. And she said, instead of asking, how's the game this weekend? Or how was your weekend? Or what did you do? Or how's your day today? Start asking, how was that formative assessment or that last test that you gave? How did the students do? And what she missed was that doesn't build relationships or help you grow closer to anybody. It puts the emphasis on something that I believe is fleeting and doesn't really matter. But had she said something like, you know, why are you excited to be at work today? Or why are you not excited to be at work today? Either one of those things could have been a better situation to really get at what somebody is feeling. And what I really appreciate is that you caught me in this trap of thinking that we have to set aside time and space when really it's not about those things. It's about intention and well-constructed questions. So thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And what comes up for me is maybe some principals or educators thinking the question they're asking themselves, whether they know it or not, is I'm not saying this is the case because I'm not a principal, but let's just suppose, I'm going to throw out a thesis. Let's just say that they're asking themselves, how do we ensure that our students rank high on these academic tests so that our scores system or whatnot, evaluations are high? That's one question that would lead you in a certain direction. What if once, and I'm not suggesting this is the question to ask, but what I'm suggesting is asking another question will lead to different opportunities, different behaviors, different thoughts. So what if you ask, what if, how can we make ensure that each student here feels that this place would not be the same without them? That this school would not be the school if they weren't present? If that was a question, the school would be different, right? A question I have a deck in our coworkers edition, because we have 12 editions, different relationships. In the coworkers one of my favorite one is, what values do we not share with our clients? Wait, like maybe the educators, what values do we not share with the parents of our community? What values do they have that they don't share, that are not shared? Just asking these questions create the space like, oh wait, there's a new consideration. And it kind of gives you a reframing. And in the reframing, and you know this, I've read your site about your coaching and how when people see challenges, you see opportunities. In order to see that, you need a reframing. You need to see it from a different perspective. And that's what, you know, is a big take home for me. I think this works institutionally in organizations, but most fundamentally, and that's my focus, is the one-on-one relationship, whether it's your dad, your mom, your partner, your coworker. But just asking a different question creates a new connection, a new opportunity, a new exploration.
Yeah. Well, and what's so powerful about that, Topaz, is that it really does come down to those one-on-one conversations and those one-on-one relationships. That in education, we talk a lot about big data and how, like, we have 95% of our students are achieving this. And my response to that always, well, for the 5% that aren't achieving, it's a 100% failure. And that means something to those individual kids. And my whole thesis about education is that education is totally individual. That despite what we try to do in schools, education for everyone is an individual process. I want to share one thing here. And those of you who are listening, I'll put a link to this in the show notes, but I want to show this to you. This is what teachers and schools think learning looks like, a straight line. And what learning actually looks like is this jumbled, confused, weird mess with through lines through it, where you catch one thing and catch and don't catch another thing. And that's all part of the system and the process of learning. And that's totally fine for it to be that way. In fact, no matter what we do, that's how learning is going to be. And we can't do anything or make it so that it doesn't happen that way. It always will be this individual thing. And if you look, you can see the straight line that got you to where you were. But in the moment, you don't see that because everything is all jumbled and can be confusing. Go ahead. I can tell you're ready to say something.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I also, I also look into that. I love, but that's a great model. I just want to add, I think you should put some dotted lines.
Okay.
Because I don't think, sometimes the learning pauses. It's like a seed that gets laid and then it's forgotten about.
Yes.
And then 3 weeks later, someone says something or a new piece of information comes, and that is the catalyzing force that goes, boop, oh wait, now that comes. It's like Pop Rocks. You know, that old candy that you used to have, that used to hold in your hands and then you put in your mouth and then it fizzles? It doesn't fizzle in your hand. Something else has to come in contact and it fizzles and it starts making sense. So I just, in your great model, I suggest also, you know, it's not always the line itself has pauses. Yeah. And sometimes we have to allow, so for the space for those things to happen and for that marination. And I think before the show started, but we talked briefly about this. Just, you know, the two biggest questions I ask myself, big picture, is for my work about how do I apply this beautiful format of the AND that creates deeper listening and connection and dare I say empathy between participants and audiences How do I apply that in new formats that can help the world? And B, how do I educate my kids? What environments do I put them in? And I think a lot about that. But what does education mean? And I think a really, I'm sure you guys are talking about it. I've seen this, like, I don't know how many episodes you have of this past year that have AI in them, right? And what is the place of education for, what is the place of humans in the world of AI? When all the cognitive functions are going to be left for computers and robots and AI. I mean, what is the space? And I think the space for humans is that, is the heart, is our ability to connect, the ability for synergies and to come up because of the virtue of our differences, yeah, and our ability to communicate through those differences and sit in that uncomfortable space that often comes up because we have differences. But the differences is what our superpower is. Because unlike an AI, when one AI node learns something, the rest of them learn, and thus they all become the, yeah, same. But we're all learning at different rates and different things and different nuances, perspectives. That could be our superpower in relation to the fact that AI is doing it and they'll be taking care of a cognitive. So how do we cultivate education in lieu of a world that's going to be run or heavily affected by, yeah, that?
And that's something that I've been speaking about and talking with educators about as I talk about AI, is that this is a key differentiator that we have to recognize, that it is about the heart and it is about us connecting with human beings in a way that we can connect with. Now, the reality is, if it's just about asking questions, then the AI can do that also, right? Because the AI can ask a whole bunch of questions and have very well constructed questions. So how do we continue, yeah, to make that a priority? And I think what you said before, and then I'll let you speak on this topic. What you said before is, instead of falling into these, what did you say, the societal patterns that we have, societal programming yeah, that we have, mm-hmm, how do we change that? And how do we, instead of saying, how was your day? How do we ask something better? I think that's so important. Go ahead. What were you thinking?
No, I'm so glad you said it, because I think I haven't got to this so explicitly in other podcasts. So I'm glad this has come up, and I really appreciate this, because you're right. The AI can write the questions. The real part there, and to getting to the heart, we're talking about the heart, space of the heart, is what's the path there? It's by listening. It's by really listening. And I don't mean listening from the head. Like the cognitive part, you're listening to respond, you're listening to defend, you're listening to win. No, I'm talking about listening with the body, being present to the space and seeing what comes through that mechanism versus your head, which is reactive and really trying to protect you. And I think that's the difference. So you're right. Once we get the questions, they can help. But if we don't drop into actually listening to the response, right, then we're not really on that path to connection, to greater collaboration, to finding out what is needed and how we can better serve that client, that student, that teacher, that parent, right? So asking good questions, but then dropping into a deeper listening and really listening, not to respond, but listening to take in and be present to, and then seeing what comes up. Mm. That's what comes, yeah, up for me.
So what I'm thinking with this is, in a school setting, yeah, how do we do that? And like, this is where I think that AI is actually a benefit, because it allows us to not stress or worry about those things that we don't need to, and let the AI take care of that. And we focus on really listening. And I know that we were here to talk and the book 12 Questions for Love, but I love how this has shifted into the need for us to listen and really listen in a powerful way. So what advice would you have for someone to listen better in these brief, intentional situations where we have well-constructed questions?
Well, I think first is part of creating the space is, what kind of conversation are we having? You know, are we having a conversation where we're clarifying who's doing what and by when? Then that's a very clear kind of conversation. And maybe by setting that up, so like within my organization, the Skin Deep, I have four kinds of meetings. I have one meeting where this is a check-in. Okay, what's getting done? Who's doing it? By when? And so everyone knows this is not the time for brainstorming. This is not the time where we slow down and I'm, no, this is checklist. Okay. We have another kind of meeting, which is the brainstorming meeting. And anyone who comes to that meeting goes, well, we didn't get anything done. It's like, wait a second. This was a brainstorming meeting. We didn't have to come out with results. So managing expectations around what is this conversation about? Right? And sometimes you're going to enter into conversation, and I can only imagine in the education system. I've been traveling. I went to 19 different schools, 21 different schools in four countries looking for where I want to put my kids to school. Like, what's that track? I really looked into that. And I could just imagine how personal and emotional it becomes because you're dealing with people's children, right? I mean, you're dealing with parents who they're, so it's high stakes. And so, and then you have limited time, you have limited resources, you have multiple students and interests. So I can only imagine how challenging it is with the high stakes. And so I just think clarifying what is this conversation of, like, what is this space for? And maybe you have a conversation where like, okay, we're going to have a conversation here where we need to brainstorm options or discuss possibilities. And yes, during this time, we need to also move into decision-making and implementation. So then divide those two. Because the thing that makes for great decision-making, I mean, we're going to brainstorm ideas, discuss, everyone has open, is different than for implementation. When we get to implementation, it's like top-down, we need to execute this. So demarcating in the meeting, okay, we're deciding this, we're discussing what's ideas. Okay, yes, I'm listening to you. Wait, okay, I'm not responding with my response. I'm actually going to play back to you what I hear your idea is so that you know you're heard. And then I'll respond with another idea or, well, what about this, right? And then once we have that, and we're like, okay, now we need to, this is what we're going to do. Great. Now we're moving into the second phase, which is execution, different kind of conversation. Now we're not, and I think just being conscientious of where we are within the conversation, the process, or what kind of conversation this is, creates the expectations of what is the behavior, the rules of that conversation. Does that make sense?
You know, yes. See, right? Yeah. So I have this tool that I use. I call them communication cards, and I have them on my door, and I tell people, this is how you control my reaction. You give me a card and you say, this is what we're talking about. So, you know, one of them is I need to vent, and you give that to me and I don't do any problem solving. I don't do anything to try to help you figure out how to make this better. I just listen and say, wow, that must be really frustrating. And that is literally all that I need to do, because you've said, this is how I want you to act. And like taking these simple approaches of setting the intention for what it is that we're discussing is incredibly powerful and really quite simple to do. And so, you know, a lot of times teachers would come in and would start going off about something, and I hear a problem and I think, hey, that sounds like a problem. I'm a problem solver. Let me help you out. And they'd walk away frustrated because that's not what they actually wanted. So I started putting these communication cards on my wall. And if people didn't bring one in, I'd say, which one is it? And oftentimes they'd say, well, it doesn't really fit into one of those 9 communication cards that you have. And I'd say, all right, let's talk for a minute and then we'll find which one it fits into, because I'm pretty sure it fits into one of those somewhere. And always it would, and we'd be able to figure out. The challenge is that sometimes people don't know what they need, especially in these off the cuff, passing in the hall, I need a quick second kind of situations that happen all the time in education. So before we go on real quick, you had 4 meetings: check-in, brainstorm, decision-making and implementation. Were those the other two?
What was brainstorm? Brainstorm is one. Social, just social. Like, this is a social time connection. We not decision-making and check-in. Like, you know, what, who, what, when. I have a graph I can bring up and send that your way, but I have those 4. And then you mentioned venting. We use the term venting, and we bring it up in a few times because I think it's key. What you're saying is, I think it's really important to have common language and common artifices, common conceits, common structures that we know. Oh, this is that kind of meeting. Great. This is this thing. So my company, we say, venting. Someone might in a meeting start kind of complaining, letting off steam. They might not be aware that they're venting, but they could let off steam for 5 minutes, and that can also bring the team down, the energy down. You don't know, especially in virtual reality, you don't know who's doing what, how they're feeling, how their day is going. So one person is venting. We call it out. Say, are you venting right now? And they go, oh, I am actually venting. I'm letting off steam. Great. You have 2 minutes. We allow 2 minutes for venting because we can't keep venting. Venting is important. You got to let out the steam. You got to let it out because before you can actually start dealing with what is, you just got to react to it. You got to let the emotion through. It's part of letting the emotion go through you, right? I think sometimes we race to, okay, I'm upset about this. I'm going to go for solutions. Like, hold on a sec. As a group, we need to let this vent out. So the emotion, let's feel the emotion. Okay, great. Give it a 2 minute mark. So we don't go too long, but long enough to let it out. Great. Now after the 2 minute mark, or once they're done within that 2 minute mark, now let's talk about what we're going to do about it. So we don't spend all our time letting off steam because sometimes people can get, that can give you a lot of energy, just letting off steam and complaining, if you will, or venting, if you will, and actually not moving into action.
Yeah.
And so I think having that, some clear conceits or common language that we speak, common concepts that we all understand. So you have, you know, you're in the hallway, you see something like, oh, 1 second, you have this, let off steam, I gotcha. We could take the next phase of the conversation, the next break, when I pass you next, you know.
I like that. I think the real power there is calling it out and knowing what it is and being comfortable with doing that, because not everybody's comfortable with doing that. And they get nervous saying, this is what I really need to do in the moment. But that's not a bad thing.
And I think underlying that is, let's all acknowledge the fact that we're learning how to communicate. Just because I'm 47 years old male who's had this experience and this and that, and I went to university or not, doesn't mean I'm a great communicator. Maybe I can communicate with wonderful words, but maybe my ability to emotionally articulate my feelings, what I call emotional articulation, is not very practiced, because every time the emotion comes up, I push it away and I reject it and I just stay in my head. We can acknowledge the fact that we are all on a journey practicing communicating and sharing. And that communicating is not only articulate, it's being present when someone's uncomfortable. It's learning to identify different feelings. I mean, I remember being 25, going to therapy, and the therapist giving me a piece of paper with 5 columns, like probably 100 words. She goes, how are you feeling? I'm like, what are you talking about? How am I feeling? She's like, well, maybe choose one of these words. I said, oh my God, this is really hard. But that was the beginning of starting to say, okay, so let's acknowledge, because where do we learn? I mean, we're talking about principle here, right? You're foreign principal, you're coaching on the principles, the audience are principal educators. Where do we really learn to have quality conversations? Whatever the quality conversation you want to define, whether that means getting something done, creating the space, to listen to someone vent, to brainstorm. Where are we really taught to have cathartic conversations, to have really effective communication? And I don't want to say effective because that could be like, oh, get ABC done. So that might not be the right word. That's why I use cathartic or deeper conversation.
Or connecting conversations.
And
connective
conversations.
Yeah,
That's
one of the areas of education. And we are often putting educators in a position to have to solve all the world's problems and talk about everything that, you know, teach about everything that needs to be taught. Some of these things, like, how do we learn to communicate? We don't learn that in school. And school may not be the best place to learn that, but we can certainly move in that direction. And, you know, we can't solve all the world's problems in this conversation, but I think if we learn how to listen as the adults in schools, we'll be able to model that for students, and that will move us into the right direction for sure. This has been a really awesome conversation, and I think we could probably go on about this for another couple hours. I've really enjoyed my time with you, and I hope to be able to have you back on the show again. But my last question is, what is one thing that a principal can do this week to be a transformative leader like you?
Stop looking for answers. Create better questions. Stop looking for answers. Create better questions. Just put your focus on the questions, not the answers. Instead of trying to find a solution to the question you're asking yourself, create 30 versions of the question and choose the one that you find is most passionate about, that you're most engaged with, that's most empowering, and the answer will be obvious.
Boy, that's deep. We could do a whole nother podcast just about that. Topaz, if people want to learn more from you or get connected with what you do, where can they go?
TheSkinDeep.com is where all our products are. For the book, 12 Questions for Love, it's on Amazon. It's on ebook, audiobook, basically anywhere you get your books. And then my personal stuff is TopazAdizes.com. But the best in all the work is TheSkinDeep.com, and it's on YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok and such.
Awesome. So thank you. Very good stuff. Thanks so much for being part of Transformative Principle today.
Thanks, Jethro. Take care.
Do you want to simplify your school's technology, save teachers time, improve students' performance on state assessments? You can do it all, but don't waste another minute. Head straight to IXL.com/BE to learn how IXL's research-proven teaching and learning platform can help you achieve all these goals. That's IXL.com/BE. There are lots of solutions out there for giving students what they need when they need it. But when do they actually do all of those things? You need flexible time. When added into your master schedule, flex time enables students to get extra help or intervention, meet with teachers, make up work, get physical exercise, and try new enrichment offerings. If you're thinking of giving it a try, check out MyFlex Learning, which unlocks the benefits of flexible time without all the headaches you get with it usually. Its intuitive design and SIS integration makes implementation and training a breeze. Make your flex time work for you. Visit myflexlearning.com/BE to learn more and receive $500 off your first year. That's myflexlearning.com/BE.